This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And I am so glad to have you here with us. So, we've all wallowed in self-pity at one time or another. I mean, come on, fess up. We all have done it. But after you meet my guest today, you may never do that again. Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville, also known as Dr. Dorothy, has a story of survival unlike most of those you and I have ever heard. She's from starting her life as an illegitimate child of a Catholic mother who gave her up to an orphanage only to be readopted by her birth mother later on. She lived in poverty and was forced to be outside, live outside in a Boston neighborhood, no matter the weather, for up to 16 hours a day. She joins us now as a renowned speaker and author who was featured on the Oprah Winfrey Network, TED Talks, New York Times, and much more. She's now a licensed therapist and coach who helps people reclaim their passion and fulfill their dreams. Please welcome Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville. Dr. Dorothy, thank you so much for being here.
You're so welcome. It's a real joy.
Yeah, and when I say that, I mean, I don't mean that lightly. Thank you for being here, because I imagine along the way it was possible you wouldn't be. You know,
more than people once, in your, actually.
I bet. I mean, people who grow up in the way you grew up could go one way or go another, and you went the other. So we are blessed and so thankful to have you here. So really, I would love you to just, I mean, I'm just going to dive into your story. I mentioned that you started out, you know, in an orphanage. So take us from there, because the story is really what Hollywood stories are made of. It's really incredible.
I've been told often I should write a book, and actually I did. So all of this is written down in the first of my four books. But when I was born, my mother did leave the hospital early, and I was placed in an orphanage because she came from theoretically a good Irish Catholic home, and good Irish girls don't have illegitimate children. So she left. I was placed in an orphanage and raised there until I was about three, and she married someone who found out I was in an orphanage, and he decided, against my mother's best wishes, to adopt me anyway. So I was adopted by him and her and came back to the housing projects. But they lived with my grandmother, my mother's mother, as well as an older brother and a younger sister. And the grandmother did not want to ever see an illegitimate child in her home. So what they would do is get me up at 5:30 in the morning and give me breakfast and then put me outside in a playpen outside the front stoop in the projects and leave me there until 9:30 at night after she went to bed. Then they would come out and get me, bring me in and give me dinner, and then put me to bed again so I could be up and out before she woke up. So in effect, until I was six, she had never seen an illegitimate child in her home.
Well, let me stop you there for a second. So you were 3 years in the orphanage. They brought you back when you were three. So this was going on for 3 years.
Correct.
And what about people in the projects? Did anybody say anything? Was anybody there to help you? I mean, how did you survive?
Well, this was before the days of DCF. This was before the days of all of those child protective services we have now in place. How did I survive? I think what happened is I truly was probably born as very much an extrovert, but that supported it. I have a girlfriend of mine who laughs now and says she could see me at 3 and 4 years of age calling everybody who walked by over to speak, so that I became a public speaker when I was just a toddler and an outgoing personality. And so how did I survive? I did. You know, it's amazing what the human spirit can do. We see stories all the time on television of, in war zones, what people are able to survive and come out that was far worse than what I went through.
It's funny, you know, perspective is so interesting, because you tell your story and I can't even imagine that. That's like the worst thing. But then you have this horrible story and you know of others that were worse off than you. It's perspective is really, I think, a way that, you know, with someone, you know, when we go through terrible things, to put that perspective on is certainly one way to cope and get on with it. Now, weren't you also abused by your stepfather?
Well, yes, he was. Actually, he was my adopted dad. He was my dad. He was the man who raised me, rather than my biological father. Yes, he was pretty much a sadist. So we were beaten or whipped every single day, the entire family. But for whatever reason, I think because of the gift that I was not really a part of the family, I had been outside for so many years, that I was far more independent and less intimidated. So I was able to stand up to him and protect my mother and my brothers and sisters for those years, from the time I was 6 till 17 when I left the house. And, yes,
at 6,
it was.
You were protecting your mother?
My mother and my brothers and sisters.
How do you protect your mother and your brothers and sisters at age 6? I mean, like, how can you possibly stand up to somebody that towers over you with power and like that?
I think because no matter who we are, we want to be loved. And even people who are brutal, they want to be loved. They want to be cared for. And so if he was beating somebody else, and I somehow had the intrinsic sense that I had more stamina, more life force, whatever, than the others. So if he was whipping somebody or beating somebody up, he was a pro ball player, so they would fight over whether or not he could beat us up with closed fist or an open fist. And if he was beating somebody up, I would just start screaming that I hated him and he was a bully and he needed to leave them alone. And he would, and then he would come to me and beat me up instead, so that they would be protected. And because I knew that somehow I had a stronger spirit. I remember he would say things like, I'm going to break you the way they break horses. And I would be determined that that wasn't going to happen. And yet I'd be frightened that it could happen to my brothers and sisters and my mother.
Isn't that interesting that at that young age, you put them before yourself?
Well,
wow.
I think when you finally have a home, you don't want to lose it.
Right.
You know, when you finally have a place where you can be during the day, who would want to lose that? You've been without that. So, you know, we all have such different psychological perspectives. We all have different coping mechanisms, and we all have a different sense of our own power.
So then, okay, so fast forward now. That occurred until you left. You were how old when you finally left your home? And were you going to school? I mean, you were going to regular school, correct?
Well, I never went to nursing school. I that just wasn't an option for me.
No, I mean like when you were going to regular grade school.
Well, I went to elementary school, yes. I went to elementary school and high school. And where I grew up, you know, many of us started freshman class and a very small percentage end up graduating from high school. When you're in the housing projects, it's a different story. And so for many, those of us who made it to graduation, there's about 15 of us made it to graduation. The expectation was you graduate in May, you get married in June. And that was pretty much what I was going to do until I decided at one point that I wanted more. Getting married was fine. He was handsome. He kissed well. And what more do you know at 17? And so worked for me. And then what was going to happen was that I also wanted to do more. So I wanted to go to college. But Dad didn't believe in educating girls. He thought they were a waste of money because they get pregnant, they get married, and then you've lost a good education. So I, being somewhat independent, decided I would go to nursing school. So I applied to nursing school and went for my interview because I had good grades. Went for my interview and realized I went to an unaccredited inner-city school and therefore was not allowed to go to nursing school. So both of those options were closed to me at that point. Yeah.
So your high school that you went to was unaccredited by the education department?
Correct.
Of you were in Boston, right?
I was in Boston. I was in South Boston, yeah.
Amazing. And somehow that school was allowed to run. There were actual teachers there, but it was unaccredited.
Correct.
Wow. Okay, go on. It's just amazing to me. So you can't get into nursing school, then what happened?
So then I couldn't get into college either, and so then I decided I wanted out. Getting out was more important. You know, living in a tenement with 10 or 20 children was not my first goal. It was one of my goals, but not my first goals. And I wanted else. I else wanted something else. And so I decided another option would be I would join the Sisters of Mercy and become a Catholic nun because I was raised Irish Catholic. And I applied, but then discovered that the Catholic Church doesn't allow illegitimate children in the convent. Oh. So that road was closed as well. I could not become
a sister. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I thought, though, that you said that you were married. I was married later.
I got married later.
Okay. So you got married later on, but you wanted to become a nun. How old were you at that point?
At 17.
Okay, at 17 you wanted to become a nun because you thought that was your only road, and that road was even closed to you.
Right. At the time it was, but at one point I remember telling one of my teachers asked me and said, you know, Dorothy, what are you going to be doing? Are you marrying Michael? And I said, I guess, because there's no place else to go. There's no way out. And so I told her what I had done, and she laughed because I had spent a fair amount of time in detention. It was never my fault. I was just a poor, innocent, precocious child. So I spent a lot of time in detention. But it was usually for talking in the hallway or doing something, you know, and nothing of any significance today. But the rules were the rules, and I happened to be caught breaking them on a regular basis. And so she said, why would you want to become a nun? You spend so much time with us now between classes and detention. I would think you would want to get far away. And I said, well, if I'm in the convent, you can't send me to detention because I'm already one of you. And so she just laughed. And she joined with my parish priest, and they applied to about 1,000 communities around the world. And they found one community in Quebec that staffed prisons and reform schools and had the creche, which was a home where we had 2,000 babies from unwed mothers. And they decided, since they worked with prostitutes, they would take a risk on an illegitimate child. And so they allowed me to join the community, and I became a Good Shepherd sister.
In Quebec.
And once I had on a long black habit, Mother Superior said, Sister, I'm going to send you to college. And I said, Mother, they won't let me in. And she said, Sister, if I send you, they will. And so Mother sent me in. They let me into college. And so I ended up getting an undergraduate degree. And I did 3.5 years in there and then went and worked in residential treatment. I had wanted to be a social worker, became a social worker, and worked in residential treatment with girls from 6 to 16.
Now, I'm going to stop you there because we have more, so much more of this story. But when we come back, we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, you decided that this wasn't quite enough. You wanted to go see the world, and you found a way to do that. So stand by. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll learn more. Dr. Dorothy Martin-Neville, Dr. Dorothy, stand by.
Hi, this is Steve Kidd, the host of Thriving Entrepreneur. You can listen to us Tuesdays, noon Eastern, on the EWN Radio Network. I want you to know you are uniquely brilliant, created for a purpose. The world needs you, and we want to help. Listen to me and my guest Tuesdays, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the EWN Radio Network as we help you learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
Welcome back to Close Up. Yes, I am Phyllis Smith, and we are speaking with Dr. Dorothy. Dr. Dorothy Martin-Neville, what a story she has of survival. Raised, started in being an illegitimate child in an orphanage, adopted by her birth mother and father, abused, abandoned, sitting out, you know, forced to be outside for 3 years, for 16 hours a day to avoid the grandmother that was living with them, because she would not allow an illegitimate child in the house. Unbelievable story. She takes us to Quebec, where she becomes a nun who sent her to college, but that wasn't enough. And so now she decides, Dr. Dorothy, you want to see the world. So tell us how that happened and what you did to make that happen.
Well, what happened there, I mean, life is quite an adventure. You've got to have a sense of humor and a lot of faith to thoroughly enjoy this journey. And thank God I'm blessed with both. But what happened within religious life, they transferred me. I lived in Maine, and I worked in the residential treatment center, was in Massachusetts. And so when it was decided that maybe this wasn't the best after, you know, a number of years, maybe this wasn't the best path for me, that maybe being out in the world was a better idea, I went back and visited girlfriends, and those that I could find were living a very different lifestyle. They were still living the lifestyle that I would have lived if I hadn't left the projects. And so I decided I wanted to see the world, and the best way to do that was to become an international airline stewardess. So I applied to all the airlines in the Yellow Pages, having no concept that you need a passport. I didn't know what a passport was, and no realization that you had to live in the country you were flying out of. I was just so naive and innocent, and eventually ended up, amazingly, you needed two languages in those days in order to be an international airline stewardess, and I had French because I had lived in a Canadian community.
Brilliant.
You know,
yeah.
It's truly, as I've lived my journey and I've worked with hundreds of thousands of people, I've noticed that every dream we have prepares us for the next, even when we're not realizing it. Every dream we have gives us skill sets, gives us strengths and abilities we didn't know we needed, and yet we develop it for that particular dream, and it's really just the jump-off spot. It's the skills we're going to take to the next dream, making us more and more, really, of who we're meant to be. And for me, traveling the world as an international airline stewardess was just a gift beyond words. I now went not only from the projects to a semi-cloistered life in the convent. I now was traveling the world and with a whole other realm of experiences I never could have imagined.
Let me ask you this. So you before you mentioned, you said you have faith and what was the other thing
humor.
You said? You have faith and humor. You have both. In all of this, is it the, and when I say faith, it's like you've been through a lot, but what you just said is that it's almost like knowing that you are where you're supposed to be, that somehow this is part of your fate, and knowing that even in bad times will help you get through the worst of it. And that's, I'm asking you that.
I truly believe there's a purpose for everything in our lives. And there's nothing that comes into our life that we can't learn from. There's not a person we meet that we can't learn from. That this is a spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. And it's quite an adventure when you approach it with faith and humor. I just truly believe that this is a spiritual journey we're walking, and everything that happens to us really calls us to become more and more of who we are called to become. Mm. We are continuously evolving, continuously becoming, if we are willing to learn from all of the journeys we're walking.
Yeah.
When we choose to close down and become angry or bitter or stuck or whatever it may be, and some of us get so distracted that we get lost in our lives. And at that point, once we're lost in our lives because we're so busy doing that we really stop being, we cease growing and we start surviving. We just start surviving the journey.
And sometimes
sadly, so many people are surviving.
Just surviving. You know, it's sometimes, you know, we could get caught up in the tears. Like it feels like, you know, the world could be, you know, caving in, or at this moment, you know, when you're crying over something, you know, whatever might have happened. Maybe you're in a bad relationship, or you're at a crossroads in your life, and you can't seem to get up, or you know that you need to, you know, you're not healthy and you're not taking care of yourself, you know, and you get caught and think that there isn't, you know, what's the end? You know, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? But the attitude that you're talking about, if you look at it, that even in those moments, those dark moments, if we think of it as I'm supposed to be here right now because I'm supposed to learn from it. What can I, if we can look at everything and say, what can I learn from this? What can I, you know, then as you say, we learn from it and then we can get unstuck. Am I right?
Right. I mean, we're all human. We are all going to go through those moments of feeling despair, feeling hopelessness, feeling trapped or stuck or whatever it may be, feeling lost. Every one of us goes there. The difference is some of us live there. Mm. But we all go there. And when you go there, do cry. When you go there, and I do tell clients or in the old days tell patients, take a day every now and then, a pure self-pity. Take a day of sitting on the couch, having a glass of wine and popcorn and watching movies all day. Just take a day every 6 months and once a year, whatever works for you, just feeling sorry for yourself, knowing nobody in the world has it as hard as you do. Nobody in the world knows what struggle is life except for you. Take that day, and you will discover that about 7, 8 o'clock that night, you are so disgusted with that attitude. You're able to see through the ludicrousness of that belief system because in spite of yourself, you begin to see all of the successes you have had. You begin to see how you were so much more of you than you were last year or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and all of a sudden, you can begin to see how blessed you are. I think the difficulty comes when we don't have permission to be human. When we are struggling so hard to be perfect or to be on top of things or to be in control that we don't give ourselves permission to just stop, and hate ourselves or hate life or feel like a victim or feel overwhelmed, whatever it may be. When you have time to feel it, you don't have to run so fast from it.
Yeah.
You know?
Did this happen to you? I mean, what was a turning point for you to take on, to adapt and adopt this thinking?
I think, I think one of the gifts was when I was very young, and my father would say to me, I'm going to break you the way they break horses. And I said to myself, no, you're not.
Mm.
No, you're not. You can't break me. And I think that more than once I thought he would. More than once I thought I'd spend my life in an insane asylum someplace if I couldn't get out, if I couldn't survive. But I did. And I think that when you take it day by day, anything can happen.
Yeah.
And then I noticed, and I think this is the key of this is when you have had enough experiences where you know that you fall into that moment of hopelessness or that moment of depression, and you realize, oh, my God, I've been here before. And every time I'm here, I always seem to get out of it. You begin to recognize that there's a pattern here.
Mm.
You begin to let go of the drama. You begin to let go of the exaggeration. And you realize this may feel like the worst possible moment in my life, but I've had that same feeling of the worst possible moment in my life 10 times before, and somehow I always seem to come out better than I was before that moment.
Right.
So it's not that you enjoy the moment, but you realize, without being dramatic, this is not the end of the world. This is just a really bad time. And you learn yourself, what do I need to get out of this really bad time? And for some of us, it's really reconnecting with girlfriends, or it's really getting involved in something in the community. It's getting involved in a prayer group, whatever it may be for you, because we're all different, and there's no one right way to do this. Whatever works for you is your way. And now we've got the whole world of coaching, which never existed in the old days. And
right.
So now, is there a coach that can support you coming alive, reclaiming yourself, finding who you are again, and recognizing that you're so much more than you were when you fell into that period of being lost or discouraged?
Yeah.
You know, so it's experience.
Yeah, and I think that experience, it's so important. In fact, I was just talking to my daughter about it. My daughter is 22. She was working in an environment that was terrible, abusive. I mean, has been apprenticing as a tattoo artist for the last 5 years, and the whole industry is just there's a lot of dysfunction, a lot of testosterone being thrown around. Women are treated terribly, and it's kind of like a hazing thing that she has to go through to go through the apprenticeship. And she finally, the way she was being treated, she was offered, because she's very talented, was offered have a place, be an artist at this other shop that is the antithesis of that. And she went in and talked to the owner, who's scared her to death. She's got anxiety and said, "I'm done. I'm leaving." And she was put down herself when it was over, because she thought that she didn't confront him enough to let him know that he was the cause of her anxiety. But I said to her, I said, "You know what? I said, you're 22 years old. You don't accomplish these things. If you're afraid of speaking out, it doesn't just all of a sudden you wake up and you can do it. It happens from a series of small shifts and doing it,
right.
Like you say, experience, small little experiences that happen over time, and eventually, it kicks in and then you can accomplish what you want to accomplish. I think, Dr. Dorothea, don't you think that people tend to think things, their dreams have to happen right away, or they have to, if they're in a crossroads, they have to jump off the cliff right away. But do you agree that it doesn't happen that way?
Oh, it doesn't happen that way. I have a talk that I do, and it's called Seizing the Dream, 5 Steps to Claiming Your Dreams. Seizing your dream with passion and purpose, 5 Steps to Claiming Your Dreams. And it truly is. There's a process that takes place there. The first step here is you've got to let go of all those negative messages you receive from everybody telling you that it's impossible, it's not going to work. And we've all heard that. And eventually we don't need to hear from anybody else, because we can sabotage ourselves beautifully all by ourselves. And you have to work through that. And getting through that is like, whoa, the first step is done. And you have to work through that, whatever the dream is. And she was probably hearing from everybody, this is what it's like in this world. If you can't deal with the world, get out of it. Wait a minute, that's not true. There are other options. Let's deal with those. Don't buy the negative messages. Work through them. Recognize you're so much more than they are. And go for it. And then, get some clarity. Be willing to jump out of the box and do it differently. You can't live within a box and achieve your dream. You're going to stay stuck where you are.
And there's plenty of people that want to burst that dream. I mean, this boss of hers, the guy that owned the shop, said to her, it's your problem. It's your problem. You're too sensitive. You need to deal with it.
People who have truly followed their own dreams are wide open to supporting others and following theirs.
Yeah.
People who are surviving the journey want you to survive. So know who you're traveling with.
That's right. All right, listen, we're going to take another short break. When we come back, we're going to jump ahead now, because you traveling the world just wasn't quite enough for you either. So you took literally a deep dive and went somewhere for a decade. And I just love this part of this too, that you just love someone like you who just takes the leap and just says, I want to do this, so I'm doing it. So I just love that. It's great. So we'll hear more about that coming up right after the short break.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called Accelerated Networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. and once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with your host, Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back. Just loving this conversation with Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville, also known as Dr. Dorothy. What a life you've had, Dr. Dorothy. I'm going to have you take us from you traveling the world as an airline stewardess, and that wasn't enough for you. So take us to your next adventure.
While I was flying, I got married and moved to Connecticut and lived in Connecticut. I was married for 15 years. And when I was divorced, I had a kindergartner and a fourth grader. And so I needed to support us. I needed to take care of my kids and give them the life I wanted them to have. And so what I ended up doing was going back, and I got my master's in therapy and opened up a practice in psychotherapy. And I was truly blessed. I was in practice about 3 months, spoke at that time, this was many years ago, to every women's group, church group, synagogue group, book club, everything that I could speak to for about 3 months. Got my practice going and ended up seeing 42 patients a week for 17 years and having a 6-month waiting list from pretty much all that time.
Amazing.
So within 3 months, I had a waiting list. I was truly blessed, you know.
I just have to stop you there for a second, though, because being that, you know, eWomen Network, our parent company, mm-hmm. supports women entrepreneurs, you just said something very important. You knew back then, and this is something that you hear all the time now, that one component, very important component in getting growing your business is speaking. So I just want to, you just said it. You spoke everywhere you could and then in 3 months you had more patients than you could handle.
Right. And so I had that 6-month waiting list. And ironically, I didn't even think about it at that point. But today I'm president-elect of the National Speakers Association here in Connecticut. Mm. So when it's something you truly believe in and you want, it's amazing how things evolve over time.
Right,
but anyway, so I
right.
spoke, and I had my practice, and I supported us and raised my kids. And then when it was time, my daughter, who was the older one, Amy Lynn, left for Georgetown, and then it was Mike and I for 4 years, and then Mike left for Cornell. And when I drove home from Cornell, which was about 6.5 hours to West Hartford, where we lived, I sobbed. I walked into my home just nauseous. Mm-hmm. Knowing I wasn't so dramatic, my life was over, but I loved being a mom and knowing that part of my life was over. And once they go to college, they visit you. They never really live
That's
with
right.
you. They never, you're really your baby again. And
Been
so
there.
I pulled in the house and in the kitchen, and like a good Irish girl, poured a large glass of red wine and just thought, okay, where are you going to go with the rest of your life? And I knew I could get, I had this huge home. The kitchen was larger than my apartment growing up in the projects. And thought the house felt like a cave without doors slamming and people running up and down the stairs. And I didn't want to be there any longer. I felt too lonely. So I thought I could get a smaller house. I could get a condo and an apartment. And thought I don't want to do any of that. I've worked seeing 42 patients a week for 17 years. At that point, I had my own school I had founded, the Institute of Healing Arts and Sciences. I had become certified in 9 modalities of integrative healthcare and developed a 4-year program in energy medicine, teaching physicians, nurses, occupational therapists, massage therapists, physical therapists, a method of energy medicine I had created. And it had been funded by NIH to research my work, and I had used that to pay for my dissertation. And so at that point, with all of the things I was doing, putting away all the money from my school to support colleges for my little ones and living on my income as a therapist and so forth, I thought, I need out. And at that point in time, I thought, that's it. I want out. I don't want another house. I just want out of here. So I picked up the phone, called American Airlines, and said, get me a one-way ticket to Anguilla in the British West Indies, and called an agent and said, put my house on the market, and let my office know that in 3 weeks I was going to be leaving the country and we needed to notify all my patients. And so I had a massive take sale and gave some.
Let me ask you this. So you have all these patients there, and they're in counseling with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you're leaving. I mean, how many of the, were they in complete panic mode? I mean, I know how it can be when you really rely on your therapist. Your therapist is like a huge part of your life.
Right.
What did they do? I mean, that must have been.
But what I did is some of those, I was going to be coming back every 2 months to teach at my school that I founded. It met for 1 weekend, all day Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every 2 months. So I was going to be coming back every 2 months for a week. And I would fly in Thursday night, teach Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and travel the Eastern Seaboard speaking if I had speaking engagements. And if I could, I would take one or even 2 days during that trip back to see patients. So those who really needed constant care, I referred out to people that I thought would be a perfect match for them.
Mm.
And those who were okay doing sessions online, on the phone, or seeing me every 2 months, I would keep. And so those are the folks that I would see when I came up. I'm not a therapist that really wanted or felt it was healthy for my patients to become so dependent upon me that they were going to be with me for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
I think as an effective therapist, you want to teach your patients life skills and independence so that I'm a support system. I don't carry them, I support them. And there's a dramatic difference. So it worked out really well. And everybody was thrilled. They were thrilled for me because they knew I was following my dream. And how hypocritical for me to encourage them to do that when I didn't have permission to do it.
Yes,
myself.
Yes. So you did that for 10 years you were there.
10 years I lived in the Caribbean. I lived on Anguilla. And I came back to America 8 years ago.
Why'd you come back?
I never expected to come back, but I did.
Why?
After a while, what I realized is that although I love, my heart is really, it just loves Anguilla, it's very much there, that my passion, my vibrancy, and my aliveness really needed a much bigger scope. When I moved there, we had 6,000 people and about 10,000 goats, and we had one paved road. So it was very much an exquisite little island. It's not a St. Martin or a Nassau. It was a very small little island. And if we needed to go shopping for more than really, really extreme basics, you took a ferry over to St. Martin and went shopping in St. Martin to do grocery shopping or to buy things you needed. Or if you needed furniture, you flew up to Puerto Rico. We were a very, very small island, and which was glorious. But after 10 years, I had been so fed, was so alive, my soul just knew it was time to come back. And I got a call asking me to be co-chair of the advisory board of a multi-million-dollar grant that UConn Medical School had received in energy medicine and frontier medicine, which is another term for energy medicine. They wanted me to be co-chair of the advisory board and be on that board. And NIH had offered me grant funding to research my work because it had been so effective in healing diseases that it made sense to come back to America and live the next stage of my dream.
Can you tell us in a nutshell, when you talk about energy medicine, the average layperson might not know what that means. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Certainly. There are mornings you wake up and you're full of life, and you're just ready to fly out of bed and take on your day. Other mornings, taking the covers off seems exhausting. And what we have learned is that physicians measure energy patterns through EKGs and EEGs, but you have energy patterns throughout your entire body. When you can learn to manipulate those through acupressure, through many different modalities, that getting that energy flowing, getting that movement going, it's like taking a stagnant pond and actualizing it, activating it so that it's flowing and flowing. It cleanses your system, and it's a marvelous way to sustain health or reclaim your health by working with the energies in your body. And every experience you've ever had in your life is locked in cellular memory. Every cell in your body remembers every experience you've ever had in your life. And so for us to be able to work with that cellular memory to get the energy flowing through your body, it activates cellular memory, if you will. So whatever difficulties or traumas, whatever's in your life, we can literally get that energy moving, get it unstuck, get it flowing, and then just clean out your system so that you find out that diseases are, and we know this now through epigenetics, that our DNA shifts and changes throughout our journey based on our life experiences, based on how you hold stress, based on many different factors. But if we can help support bringing peace and removing the stress, removing the holding patterns you have, the things you're holding on to, you don't want to think, feel, whatever, getting that up and motivated and activated literally brings your health back. And
what are you physically doing to somebody to relieve, to move that energy?
Well, the technique I created is called the WISE method, Holistic Integrated Spiritual Energies. Literally begin by putting your feet on your body and grounding them, bringing them into their body. So many of us are not present. And then moving the energy up through the feet to the ankles to the knees, and moving it up the body, stopping wherever I can feel stagnation or blocks or whatever, because you can learn, as with anything, you know, an interior designer walks in your home and sees that although you think you've got green pillows all over the place, they see you've got yellow-green, you've got blue-green, you've got whatever, then they don't match because they have an eye that's so well-developed. We learn those things. When you make bread, you can feel in your hands the different textures. It's the same thing with energy. You can feel in the body where there are blockages, where there's stagnation, where there's different. Your hands truly become your eyes. They see in the experience. So a well-trained practitioner can move the energy where it's stuck or stagnant and really begin to expedite your own healing, because disease is like a stagnant pond that gets stuck somewhere in your body. Let's get it moving, bring freshness in, and it's amazing how we can heal people. And then looking at the belief systems they have, if you believe life is hard and people are against you, your body seems to close down and get heavy and weighted. If you change your belief systems that life is a gift, and we all run into difficulties, but they're only challenges, your whole energy shifts, your whole body changes, even your posture changes. And with that shift and those changes, it's amazing how your health comes back.
Right. Right.
You know, so much of your health is in your hands. So that's energy medicine. It's really looking at your spiritual beliefs. And with that, I don't mean religion. I mean your spiritual beliefs of life is difficult or life is a gift.
Yeah.
Everybody's against me, or there are people who don't like me, but that's not about me. It's about their biases.
Let me ask you this. So if you're accessing those cellular memories, right, and things will come up, and people could, you know, they have to really be open to, I mean, you're moving it, but when you're moving it out and present, so that person might suffer emotionally from feeling it, but you believe that is actually vital to getting rid of it.
Well, you may suffer emotionally for a half an hour, for an hour, for a day or a week, but you've been suffering from it your whole life.
Yeah.
So if you can bring that up into an awareness, and when you're suffering with it in your body, whether it's through illness or physical pain or whatever it may be, or living in denial, living in avoidance, running, or in addiction, you're living with it anyway, you're suffering from it anyway, and you're doing it alone. If you can bring it up and there's a practitioner with you, what ends up happening is, one, you're facing this difficulty with somebody by your side. You're not going through it alone this time. And somebody else can put it in a perspective that you haven't been able to. And as we've spoken about already, perspective is pretty much everything.
Yeah.
So in changing that perspective and doing it with somebody, one, you realize we've never walked alone. And two, you realize there's nothing in your life that's bigger than you are. There's no life experience, no emotion bigger than all of who you are. So learning to put that in perspective shifts and changes everything in your life.
Right. I know that it's interesting how if you look at something that like a person that you say in your life you don't like, whatever reason, they make you uncomfortable, they might be mean, whatever it is. But if you turn around and actually think of that person and say something that you're grateful for in that person, for example, or say you're in a situation that's just hard and difficult, and then turn it around and say, I am grateful for, it can change, like as you say, the perspective changes, and next thing you know, the frown and the on your face turns into a smile before you even know it.
And you're right. You are so absolutely right. And I truly believe that we are not our personalities. I believe we are embodied souls. I haven't practiced religion in quite a while, although I married a number of people. I married one of my former students about a month ago. I was the officiating person there. But I truly believe that we are all embodied souls, and therefore we are all intrinsically holy and good.
Mm.
In that what happens is in utero and after birth, we develop a personality either so that we can be loved or that we can be safe. And what happens is that so many people on the level of their personality, they live in defense, they live in fear. And some people, when they're in their fear, they express it through rage. Other people express it through needing to be in control. Some express those fear by hiding and becoming invisible. When you look at somebody, if all you see is their personality and what they are doing with it, you've truly missed the essence of their soul. You've missed who they are.
Mm.
And so one of the skills, and I teach this to my coaching clients, one of the skills in truly knowing how to be with people, especially if you want to be a leader, is knowing how to see who somebody truly is, not getting caught in what they present. Mm. And when you learn to see the embodied soul in individuals, you learn to see who they truly are. And my experience is when you do that, people will say to you, it's as if you truly see me. And the fact is, you do.
Mm.
You see beneath all of those other things.
Yeah.
So that you and begin to see who they truly are.
Yeah.
And you're not trapped. You're not trapped in all that other stuff.
Right. We're going to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about what you say, that in order to achieve your dreams, you need to step outside of the box, which
absolutely is
obvious. And something that you're a testament to. I mean, you've stepped outside of your box through your whole life.
Again and again and again.
Again and again and again. So you're going to give us some tips on how people can do that right away, right after the short break.
Hi, I'm Janelle McCauley, the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, right here on the EWN Radio Network. Join me every Thursday to find out how you can take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the food you love. Each week, I'll bring you powerful and revealing interviews with doctors, health experts, and people just like you who have learned to create a healthy future for themselves and the ones they love. I look forward to serving you great content and healthy tips on Eat Great, Live Well Radio. And remember, if you can't listen to me live, you can always get the replay at EWNRadioNetwork.com. I invite you to join me each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, here on the EWN Radio Network, and let's create your healthy future together.
Welcome back to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And we are back for our final segment, speaking with Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville, also known as Dr. Dorothy. Dr. Dorothy, how can people find you?
They can find me. My website is askdrdorothy.com. That's askdrdorothy.com. Or they can email me at dorothy@askdrdorothy.com. Or give
Great.
Me a call at 860-543-5629.
Okay. All right. So here we are, our final segment here, and I know I could go on and talk to you all day. But so you help people achieve their dreams, just, and you walk the walk. I mean, you walk the walk, you talk the talk. That's what I love about you, is that you have lived your dreams, and as you say, that's what you work with your clients to do the same. But first, we have to step outside of our box. So give us some idea of how do we step outside of that comfort zone.
One, you have to be willing to take a risk, because it's scary stepping outside of your comfort zone. But it's absolutely liberating, absolutely liberating. The first step, I truly believe, is one, the willingness to step into that fear, because we all have fear. Fear doesn't go away, it just shifts and changes. But how much power you give it is really what defines what you do with your life. So recognize the fear of really taking risks to step out of the box, to look at, where would you go if you could go anywhere in the world? What would you do if you could do anything in the world? Who do you want to become? And I think that's a real important question. I think so many people focus on what do they want to do next, where do they want to go next. To me is, who do you want to become next? Who is it that you want to be? Do you want to be a powerful leader? Do you want to be an entrepreneur? Do you want to be an employer? Who do you want to be? Own that. And once you own that, how do you want to make that happen? That becomes almost secondary. The major piece is, who do you want to be? Are you willing to risk being somebody different than who you are today, being somebody more than who you are today? And if that excites you, how you come about doing that becomes far less frightening, because the biggest question is, who do you want to be?
Yeah.
Be willing to step out of the box.
And don't you think, too, as we alluded to this earlier, that if, when you decide who you want to be, there are many steps in between that and your dream.
you're right. But how big they are, how difficult they are, and even how many of them they are, depends on you. Because when you shift and change, you put yourself into situations where amazingly so many things just happen to appear. It's mm-hmm. when you're ready and you put yourself out there, amazing things happen.
And it's really interesting. Sometimes what we think is a terrible thing, like we might be in a something might happen to us at work. We might have gotten fired.
Right.
And then we think, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Well, the next thing you know is that's opening up doors, and it forces you. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you're so right, because when you've been fired, if you sit back and think about it, and honestly think about it, you realize you haven't really been happy there for quite a while. Mm. You just didn't have the strength to leave, or that you had a vision of something else and you didn't have the strength to leave. And I really think it's the Holy Spirit or somebody giving you a little kick in the bottom and saying, it's time. It's time for the next, it's time to get going. And what are you going to do about it? I've heard this from people who've gotten divorced, who are devastated, and then 2 years later say, I never would have gotten divorced if I had my way, but oh my God, the life I have now, I never would have had if I was married. I've had people with cancer or with other diseases say to me, oh my God, I can't believe what I've learned since I was sick. Mm. I've never wished it on anybody, but it's been a gift in so many ways to me.
Yeah.
So again, whatever comes into your life, it could be your nemesis, or it could be really transformational. That's up to you.
I think, too, that we have to be careful, about setting lofty goals. You might have a dream, and I love your idea about, it's not where you want to be, in a year from now, but who do you want to be? And then achieving that who is a series of small steps and shifts. And your work, you could be... it could be that the work, in order for you to achieve those goals, is for you to work on yourself and dive into some of those deep, dark things that you've been keeping secret that are holding you back, and learning to let go of those before you can even move on. How did
You're
somebody,
right.
You know, how does someone know where to begin? Once they figure out who they want to be, what is the next step?
You take a look at what is it that you want to be. Where do you go to even begin that? It's going to be a different place. If I want to be a speaker, or if I want to be a nurse, or if I want to own a cookie store, I want a brick and mortar cookie store, versus I want to own a company where I have several employees working for me. What is it that you want? Then where are the mentors? Where are the people who have succeeded?
Mm.
Can you go and speak to those who are doing what it is you want to do? Can you go? And I find that so many people are more than willing to support you. There's always those that are in their own feeling of fear and lack, that if I tell you, you're going to steal all my patients or my clients or my customers, whatever it may be. But the vast majority who have lived their dream want to support you living yours. So once you know what it is, who's in that field that you could go speak to? Who could you interview? Who could you ask about it? And
right.
Once you've spoken and you've gotten their wisdom, if you need more help, is there a coach you want to work with? Is there a friend who has skills that they can help you with?
Mm.
You know, the SCORE, you can go to SCORE if you don't have the money to really bring in business advisors. There's so many ways you can do this.
Yeah.
It depends on you.
And I think, too, you know, with the Internet, you might, I know that this has worked for me. I have found a few people that I started following, whether it's in relation to business or just very wise people. I also have found that there are very wise business people who are wise about life as well. And I might not just be accessing them one-on-one, picking up the phone, but I receive articles from them and I read about them and I get connected with, you know, in their community. There's ways that you can learn because we have access to people, whether or not they're, you know, you can pick up the phone and talk to them.
Right.
So.
Right. And there's so many options. I mean, look at all the newsletters you can get online, all
mm-hmm.
these different people who have expertise that you don't have to pay for. And then if you're blessed and have the money, you can pay for and do private work with them. But you don't have to, especially if you're at the exploratory stage.
Right.
Keep exploring.
I have
one
more thing to ask you, and then we're running out of time. So you've done, like, so many things in your life, and you're not the type, I believe, that is going to settle down. So what are your plans for the future?
My plans for the future, to keep on traveling the world, speaking and bringing this message to as many people as possible. It's also to develop a program where I can train people who do coaching in this level, or coaches who are out there, taking them to the next level, that they've learned pragmatic tools. But what about spirituality? What about really living out of the box? What about really learning how to understand people and recognizing their embodied soul rather than their personality, to keep developing the leaders? I love working with leaders and teaching them how to be even more effective leaders in a way that their leadership feeds them rather than drains them.
Beautiful. All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with Dr. Dorothy, it's Dr. Dorothy askdrdorothy.com, correct?
Correct. It's Dorothy at askdrdorothy.com, or go to my website, askdrdorothy.com.
Very good. Well, thank you so much. We're so privileged to have you here and spreading this, your message of, you know, following your dreams and your passion. You can do it, you know, one small step at a time. And that you are just what you've done in your life and how you've survived is an example, an incredible example for all of us that we can do it too. Thank you for joining us. Nothing is impossible. Yes, absolutely. And that's spoken from someone who knows for sure. So you walk the walk, talk the talk. Thank you so much for everything you do, that you've done, and plan to do in the future. Dr. Dorothy Martin Neville, askdrdorothy.com.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.